Now, one attraction for possible buyers of MGM is the studio's giant library of old movies and TV shows. Cable channels traditionally buy those programs for reruns and play them over and over and over. But with cable channels like HBO and AMC producing more of their own shows, these reruns are being sidelined. Jesse Baker explains.
Until recently, Americans have pretty much proven themselves not only willing to watch just about anything, but willing to watch it again and again. From Lucy and Desi to the Starship Enterprise to the show that needs no other introduction.
In the criminal justice system,
it's a truism at this point that people can watch 8 hours of Law and Order in a row, including episodes that they've already seen.
New York Magazine's Emily Nussbaum.
But they're not watching it because it's high quality. They're watching it because it's soothing and comforting.
Where everybody knows your name.
Reruns, Nussbaum says, take you back and allow you to catch up with old friends. Historically, to be able to sell a show in reruns, networks only had to know one thing.
Great comedy works.
Brad Siegel is the former president of Turner Entertainment Networks, and under his watch, TNT stole, or really outbid, A&E for reruns of Law & Order. And the other unwritten rule, Siegel says, used to be that shows had to have at least 66 episodes under their belt. That magic number produced a bigger profit when broadcast networks auctioned their shows off, because it allows a cable channel to do what the industry calls stripping.
To be able to run a show Monday through Friday in a certain time slot. And typically, you'd want to go 3 months before you started to repeat.
There used to be big bucks to be made by selling a show off its original network as a rerun. HBO sold The Sopranos to A&E for more than $2 million per episode. And that's roughly the same amount that CBS got from TNT for reruns of The Mentalist. But today, any rules that regulated the rerun market are being scrambled. Cable channels are replacing reruns with their own original programming, and that's crowding out reruns. Derek Compare is the author of Rerun Nation, How Repeats Invented American Television.
These days, there's certainly more cachet in developing original series, and I think ultimately they're seeking more profits for that, too.
Original shows like Royal Pains on USA, The Closer on TNT, and Mad Men on AMC have replaced reruns as the backbone of their networks. Again, Brad Siegel.
Cable networks have tried to become brands. And in that brand and the way they define themselves, they create certain filters on the kinds of shows that when you put them all together, they sort of define a network.
Only on TBS. Very funny.
So if TBS is very funny and characters are welcome on the USA Network and TNT knows drama, then what cable networks are willing to buy as a rerun now suddenly goes through a stiff filtering process, ensuring that rerun will get along well with what cable networks are deeming their first priorities, their original programs. For NPR News, I'm Jesse Baker.
Today is the official start of the broadcast network's new TV season, and for the first time in many years, all the major networks are unveiling most of their new and returning shows in a single event-packed week. Our TV critic, David Bianculli, is impressed by the effort, but not by the results.
One of the current TV executives was just quoted as saying that this week was the first time all the broadcast networks were going head-to-head during premiere week in such an aggressive fashion. He can say that because he's young. I'm not, so I remember when the networks did this sort of thing every fall. But it is the first time in a long time that every network has come out swinging at the same time, hoping to build momentum and get attention. But this year, more than in any year I can remember, the new shows are positively underwhelming. Every fall season, the question I'm asked most often is, which new series do I have to watch? And most years, there's at least one easy answer. Glee and Modern Family, Lost and Desperate Housewives, 30 Rock, even Buffy the Vampire Slayer, though few people believed me at the time. This year, the easy answer is Boardwalk Empire, which just premiered last night on HBO. But if you restrict the question to broadcast television, to ABC, CBS, Fox, NBC, and the CW, I have a different answer. Grab a pen and some paper if you want, because here comes my complete list of the new TV shows that you have to watch this fall. That's it. Nothing. And I'm not just being cranky. As a TV critic, I've evaluated the new fall season output for 35 years now, and never before, not once, have the broadcast networks come up completely empty. How does this happen when they need viewers more than ever, and when the risky creativity of such shows as Glee and Modern Family were amply rewarded last year with audiences and Emmys? I don't have a clue. But clearly, based on this year's fall roster, neither do the broadcast networks. The best I can do in an effort to be supportive is point to a handful of shows which might improve significantly after the pilot episode and which feature actors and producers whose past work led me to expect a lot more in the first place. So in that spirit of half-hearted recommendation, let's start with Running Wild, a new Fox series premiering Tuesday. It comes from Mitchell Hurwitz, creator of Arrested Development, so that ought to be enough. But it isn't. Even though this series, about a wealthy playboy and a passionate environmentalist, stars Will Arnett and Kerry Russell, there are few laughs and fewer sparks. This exchange from the pilot may well be the high point, which proves my point.
I want you.
Oh, I want you.
No. Oh, no, 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 no. That's actually not what I was told.
Oh, that's not me. That's not me. Someone's coming in.
Sorry. I'm not doing this.
Well, on the other hand, you smell pretty good. What the hell?
Oh, wait. Okay. Let's start over.
I can't do this.
All right, we'll jump forward.
No, I'm living with a wonderful man.
Aha!
In the Amazon, we are working with a tribe that is very poor. And their village sits on a giant oil deposit that your father wants. You have to tell him not to drill there.
Oh, not to drill? Well, that's going to be problematic.
Series creator Hurwitz says he's making a lot of changes after the first episode, and he's certainly earned some slack, so I'll stick around to see if things improve. The same goes for the producer of a previous Kerry Russell series, J.J. Abrams, who made her a star with Felicity. Since then, on TV, Abrams has given us both Alias and Lost, so there was every reason to believe his new effort, a spy series called Undercovers, would be a major romp. It isn't, at least not at first. Undercovers premieres Wednesday, but as spy series go, it's not even as lively as USA's Covert Affairs, much less anything matching the wit and style of Alias. But Abrams has entertained me in the past, so I'll try again. However, that's not my reaction to The Event, the drama series that NBC is trying to build up as the next Lost, with echoes of Flash Forward and 24 and Fringe and every other complicated conspiracy theory drama on TV lately. The star is Jason Ritter, who is immensely likable, but this series isn't. In the pilot, the whole convoluted mess is an effort to build up a cliffhanger exciting enough for us to want to return for the second week. But for me, once was plenty. Will the plane crash? What is The Event? I don't care. NBC coming up with an interesting new show. Now that would be an event. NBC's The Event in any other year might qualify as the bottom of the barrel. But in 2010, that barrel already is filled with The Defenders and Bleep My Dad Says on CBS and Outlaw on NBC and Detroit 187 on ABC. But there is good news. Ignoring all these shows leaves more time to watch new episodes of the returning series that deserve to be seen. Tonight, that means House and Chuck. Tomorrow, it's Glee. Wednesday, Modern Family. Thursday, 30 Rock, Fringe, and, on its new day, The Big Bang Theory. And the weekend ends Sunday with new installments of The Simpsons, Desperate Housewives, and 60 Minutes. This year, don't bother playing with the new toys. Just stick with the old stuff.
David Bianculli is founder and editor of the website TVWorthWatching.com and teaches TV and film history at Rowan University in New Jersey. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Our associate producer of online media is Melody Kramer. Sue Spolin directed the show. I'm Terry Gross.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm David Greene. Texas, oil, steamy relationships. Ah, the vintage television series Dallas had it all. Well, so does one of this fall's most buzzed about shows, Lone Star. That series premieres on Fox tonight, and it brings us the story of Bob Allen, a con man who's scheming the oil business, not to mention scheming his two women. One of the women is played by actress Adrienne Palicki. Here she's giving her husband a tour of Houston's high society.
That guy is an idiot. He tried to build a resort in a swamp. Now he just does construction on his wife. You know how the human body is supposed to be 70% water?
Mm-hmm.
Chicky over there, 80% silicone, 20% Merlot.
Adrienne Palicki joins us, and that must have been a fun line to say.
It took a lot to get it out, actually.
Well, thanks for joining us. You're joining us from NPR West in California. And tell us a little bit about this role that you're playing, Kat Thatcher, on the new program.
Kat Thatcher is the daughter of one of the biggest oil company owners in Texas, played by John Voight. And, you know, she grew up in this high society in this world, and she's actually quite down-to-earth considering, and I think kind of wants to get away from it a little bit. And she's attracted to Bob because he's a man who's self-made, you know, came from nothing and built up himself. Of course, she doesn't know that she's also being conned. He also has another life in Midland.
And that's where his other woman lives.
His other woman, exactly.
I want to remind people, Bob is the man, the con man in the new program, Lone Star, who's playing two women, one of whom is your character. And his father actually described your character, Kat Thatcher. I want to play a little bit of that tape.
She's not your real wife. She's not your family. She's the mark. She is our way into a multi-million-dollar corporation so we can clean it out.
Pretty powerful stuff.
Very powerful. Yeah, Kat started off as a mark, and he fell in love with her, as did Lindsay, his other lady, who represents the childhood he never had, which is, you know, the Midland side, where it's just down home, you know, barbecues, and she's adorable, and you know, they have keg parties and whatever. And then you have the other side, which is the side that he would love to get to, which is that socialite world. So you get to see the two sides of Texas, but you also get to see it in a beautiful way, because they're both very strong, very smart, very sweet women.
And I'm sure a lot of your viewers will be waiting for the moments of revenge that they take on.
Or for them to possibly meet someday.
Ooh, I like that. You're a tease.
Mm.
And your own roots are Toledo, Ohio, which I guess is a different culture than high society Texas. So you're playing one of the richest women in Texas here. How did you gear up to play this role?
Living in Dallas, you kind of get a feel for the high society. So I'm just taking from that.
And you actually are all the scenes are filmed in Dallas, even though we're talking about high society Houston in the show, or how does that
yes
how does that work
absolutely
out? Why not
absolutely.
Houston?
Let's not ask questions, David. Nobody wants to go to Houston.
Okay? Enough said.
Yes, exactly. No, it's just that we have more capabilities in Dallas. You know, they're shooting quite a few shows there, so. You know, we have the crew and we have the studios and all those things.
And we should make clear that we both love Houston. We should say that.
We love Houston.
We love Houston
so much.
Well, we should also say that this is your second major television series. The first is the much beloved NBC series Friday Night Lights, in which you played a very different character from Texas.
Yes. Tyra Collette.
I'm taking the SATs on Saturday because I got to get my points up by like 1,000. And I thought it'd be better if I had a coach. And you're really good at that, so I was just hoping.
So you want me to help you out?
If you could, that would be amazing.
So you're sort of conning your own friend into helping you out, and his character had sort of a crush on you, I guess.
Yes. Well, we end up dating on the show, so he got something out of it.
and you got SAT scores.
Exactly.
So you were a high school teenager, worried about getting into college, worried about boys. How do you make that transition from that character to Kat Thatcher in the new program?
I think Tyra was more of a character. Kat, I think I bring more of myself to only because, you know, she is, first of all, my age.
You were playing much younger in Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, I was playing 16.
And how old are you?
I'm 27.
Okay. Wow. That must have been a challenge.
You know, but she was a mature 16-year-old.
And how much did that Friday Night Lights role mean to you and your career?
Well, it changed my life, ultimately. You know, it was something else because, you know, it's hard to find, especially being a tall, blonde actress, you know. It's hard to find really solid roles. And this one really, I think, showed that I had the acting chops and I wasn't just somebody who was going to be in a bikini every show on WB or whatever, you know. It was something that really gave me a platform to act, to perform.
So if you had gone down the bikini road, it might, I guess, surmise it might be hard to turn back in a way.
Absolutely. I mean, because then there's a stereotype of, oh, yeah, she's hot, whatever. She looks good in a bikini. Let's get her naked in the next minute. You know what I mean?
You're labeled,
just like,
yeah.
Yes, you're labeled. And it's so every time you find a really solid role for your age group, it's like, okay, do this one. I have to have it, you know?
Is there a favorite scene you have from Friday Night Lights that kind of shows you in that serious role that you, you know, sort of in the way that you wanted to prove yourself?
There was a scene in the first season where my mother, played by Dana Wheeler, falls through a glass table. She's been on so many painkillers and, you know, she's going for a cigarette and mm-hmm. she falls through.
Nothing's.
Somebody call 911!
I'm so sorry. I just fell. I'm so sorry.
He's okay. And I think it's the first time you really see what Tyra is dealing with. That she's the mother to not only her mom, but her sister, who's also a stripper. And it's the first time you see Tyra crack and you see where she's coming from. And I think it's a really powerful scene.
And that was a moment when you feel like your true acting came through.
I think that's when it really, as the character started to come through. And then from there on, it progressed. And I love where she's gone. I've never loved a character more and cared about a character more. So I love what she's done with herself and where she's going in her life.
And when does your acting career leave Texas?
I don't know if it's ever going to leave Texas. Keeps drawing me back for more.
There you go. Well, Adrienne Palicki, thank you for joining us and talking about this new program that is premiering on Fox this week, Lone Star. Best of luck to you.
Thank you so much, David.
That music you're listening to is from the band Mumford & Sons, and it's featured in the new show, Lone Star. You can see scenes from tonight's premiere, also read a review of the show from NPR's very own Linda Holmes, who covers pop culture for the blog Monkey See. All that and more at npr.org. Deny my dear, deny my dear. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News. From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm David Greene.
And I'm Robert Siegel. The big broadcast networks are rolling out their new shows this week. And one in particular is catching the eyes of critics. Lone Star is about a Texas con man who's trying to juggle a wife, a girlfriend, and a fraudulent oil business. The show is on Fox, but some critics say it feels more like a cable show. Well, we turn to our in-house TV expert, pop culture blogger Linda Holmes, to tell us exactly what that means.
Sean Ryan is an ideal tour guide for a look at cable dramas and broadcast dramas. He's written and produced shows like Terriers and The Shield for cable and Lie to Me and The Unit for the major networks. His list of reasons to put a show on cable starts close to home.
One is just the basic likability of your main character.
Broadcast networks like their leads to be heroes at heart. On cable, Sean Ryan built a whole show around a guy you wouldn't even trust to water your plants.
You tell Antoine I'll put a bullet in that fat head of his myself before I'll let him kill another cop.
That's Vic Mackey, the brutal cop at the center of The Shield. On cable, Vic is in good company. On Mad Men, there's the duplicitous Don Draper.
You won't get a nickel.
On Damages, there's the ruthless Patty Hughes.
Taking power away from a man is a dangerous thing.
And of course, they all owe a debt to New Jersey's own Tony Soprano.
There are men in the camp better looking at my sister.
A lot of cable dramas also have long story arcs, which makes it tough to draw a broadcast-sized audience.
Serialized shows face a tough uphill battle.
You might hear everyone talking about a show when it's been on for a couple of years, but when you're already 30 episodes behind in a long story, it's hard to figure out what's going on.
Those kinds of shows, the shows like The Shield, like Breaking Bad, that have a very serialized storyline, it's very hard to build an audience come seasons 2 and 3 and 4.
That's not a problem for the more self-contained crime procedurals broadcast networks favor.
So what's the deal? What's with the dead guys?
Shell casing, Zizzy.
Bagged and tagged, sir.
On CBS's NCIS, there might be a perplexing question at the beginning of the episode, but by the end, you're likely to hear the satisfying click of handcuffs.
Put your hands behind your back.
All those independent episodes make it easier for new viewers to jump in. In fact, that's just what happened with NCIS, which has grown over its 7 seasons to become one of the highest-rated shows on TV. Sean Ryan says that one advantage to the cable model is that the seasons are almost always much shorter than the 22-episode broadcast standard.
Doing a 13-episode season allows some quality control that is very, very helpful.
If you think your favorite big network drama hits a slow patch every year in about March, Ryan says you're probably right.
There is a moment in time when you're making a 22-episode season, and that usually comes around episodes 16 through 19, where the schedule really is beating you down.
Still, some shows might do better with 22-episode seasons or benefit from broadcast television's wider reach.
You just want to have the right show at the right place. You don't want to tell a story like The Sopranos or Deadwood on a major network. Where you get yourself into trouble is if you sell the right show to the wrong network and you suddenly find yourself having to work with parameters that don't really match what you want to do with your show.
For now, the moral complexity and longer form storytelling of cable dramas remain relatively rare on the big networks. But that doesn't mean broadcast TV isn't experimenting.
What do you need? How much you want?
Fox's new drama Lone Star has lying con man for a lead, a complex web of stories, and
million?
A first season that's only 13 episodes long.
I'll get you the money. Just don't make me do this anymore.
Once those 13 run out, Lone Star's time slot is scheduled to go to Ride Along, a new Fox police drama from Sean Ryan.
Linda Holmes is NPR's pop culture blogger. You can find her blog, Monkey See, at npr.org.